The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
So continuing the theme of the beautiful qualities of mind that are cultivated as we practice the 10 paramis, the 10 perfections. I'm going over these one each week, so this is the second week. But just as a little bit of a kind of the context for those of you who haven't heard a little bit about the paramis. The paramis, you know, in some ways, the paramis are they're understood in Asian countries as really being the ground of our daily life practice. These 10 qualities are generosity, ethics, renunciation, or letting go. Letting go usually has a better rap than renunciation. Wisdom, energy, patience, truthfulness, resolve, loving kindness, and equanimity. So these are all beautiful qualities that, as we turn our attention to our experience with this perspective that the Buddha offered us of looking at our human experience, just being curious about our human experience, these qualities are both ones that we begin to recognize as being helpful to cultivate, and also qualities that happen for us. One way to put this notion of these qualities is that they're both prescriptive, that is, they offer tools that we can incline our minds in the direction of cultivating these qualities. And so last week, talking about generosity, encouraging us to explore what does it mean to head the mind in that direction. And they're also descriptive in that as someone wakes up, as someone cultivates the mindfulness and wisdom of this practice, someone who has really let go of the ways that greed, aversion, delusion, confusion get in the way of the heart. As greed, aversion, and delusion are released from the heart, these qualities are a kind of a description of what that heart looks like. One person called these paramis, in a way, these 10 qualities, the emotional map of the heart that's awake. And so they're beautiful qualities to reflect on. So tonight I'd like to explore ethics, the second of the 10 paramis. Each of the paramis is understood in a way, I mean, they both kind of have a progressive deepening, in that we can kind of start by exploring the first, and then that will lead us a little bit into the second, into the third. So there's a kind of a way in which they can be almost seen as a map of the path of practice. And yet, what I've seen for myself in exploring these qualities is I cultivate one, as I turn or pick one. Like if I just pick generosity, for instance, then the other qualities, as I explore that one quality, the other qualities kind of begin to weave in and support it. And so another way of looking at these 10 qualities is more of strands of a cable, and not so much one followed by the next, followed by the next, followed by the next. But as we cultivate one, some of the others just kind of begin to naturally come along for the ride. So another way of seeing these paramis together, and with each week I'll try to remember to offer this piece, that each each one that follows, so that sila or ethics following dana. The teachings say that the parami that follows the previous parami perfects the previous parami. And that's, I think, why they're called the perfections. And so the understanding here is that ethics perfects generosity. So what might that mean? Why don't you turn it down just a touch? Is that okay volume-wise? Is that still okay? Great. So it's understood that ethics perfects generosity. And one of the ways of looking at that is that one aspect of generosity is giving material goods. And that's kind of it's one tier of generosity. A next layer of generosity is giving something from ourselves. And one of the understandings about ethics is that when we explore ethics non-harming, really, in our own hearts and minds, when we explore what it might mean to behave in this world, in relationship, in a way that's oriented towards non-harming, then essentially we are offering a gift, a very profound gift to the world. We're offering the gift of safety, that our behavior, that how we are in the world does not need to be feared. So this is one way in which the cultivation of ethics is understood to kind of purify or further strengthen the quality of generosity. Because we are giving of ourselves, we are giving of our actions, the actions of safety. So ethics, I know that in my own relationship with this teaching of ethics, I came from a Christian background, and the framing of the Ten Commandments really kind of guided my notion of ethics in a way. And it felt to me very much like something imposed. The Ten Commandments, even that language, the commandments, and the thou shalt not, that language also to me has a quality of should and shouldn't. And so my relationship with it, like, while I wasn't out there like wanting to go out and kill people or anything, it's just like something about the language just was hard for me. And so I think for some of us, at least, the notion of ethics, the notion of morality, can kind of have a limiting feeling, a sense of something being imposed from without, something where it's a should or a shouldn't in terms of our behavior, as opposed to being something to explore from within, as opposed to being kind of an orientation or an exploration of what is ethics from the inside. And that's how I'd like to approach this discussion of ethics tonight. What is an inner ethics? From the perspective of the whole of what the Buddha taught, the context for what the Buddha taught was really around exploring this question of dukkha, of suffering, of stress, of unease, the whole range of feeling that things are just not the way we want them to be, from what we would call suffering to the subtlest unease, a whole range of offness this word dukkha represents. And so the whole of the Buddhist path is around exploring the possibility of freedom from suffering. And so with that as a context, the exploration is around, well, if we don't want to suffer, if we want to explore non-suffering in our own hearts, in our own being, then we also have to look at the way our actions in relationship might create suffering or harm for others. And so the exploration of ethics in Buddhism is about non-harming. It's this reflection on, if I don't want to suffer, then I also need to explore what it means to not create the conditions for others to suffer. So a guiding moral principle then behind ethics in the Buddhist practice is what takes us towards or away from suffering. Things that take us towards suffering, those are understood to be things that would be helpful to avoid. Those things that take us away from suffering, that's understood to be helpful to head in that direction. And so suffering here is really understood in a human sense. I think sometimes we apply or consider ethics with relationship to culture or society. And certainly we have laws and rules, some of which are in alignment with this kind of human sense of ethics, and some of which are separate from that. But really what we're exploring here is this question of, in the sense of our humanity, what is it that helps us to move away from suffering? What is it that helps us to move towards ease, peace in our hearts? So ethics in this context is really more pragmatic. The question of non-harming outwardly, you know, if you notice what happens in your own heart, if you've done something that caused somebody else harm and you've found out that it caused them harm, you know what happens? It hurts. It doesn't feel so good. It doesn't feel so good when we realize that we've caused somebody else harm. Sometimes we take this and turn it into shame and blame. We take that feeling of, oh, I did something bad, I did something wrong. What I'd like to explore here is, rather than going that way, rather than moving in the direction of shame and blame when we realize that something has happened that has caused harm, to explore the possibility of, oh, was there something I didn't understand? Is there something I need to learn here? This offness that we feel when something happens that we've done that's created suffering for somebody else, that's a kind of an inner, we could call it almost an ethical compass. It hurts when we hurt other people. And so that feeling of offness is actually serving to help us to understand, oh, there's something to learn here. There's another direction, maybe. Not to beat myself up, not to make myself feel bad about myself, but what can I learn? What can I learn? I'll try to give some examples of that in a little bit. So that's one quality of the inner ethical compass, that as we recognize that we've hurt somebody, it's like the heart shakes a little bit. Oh, it doesn't feel so good. And if we can recognize that without beating ourselves up about it, it will support us in moving in the direction of peace and ease. So that moment when we recognize, oh, I've done something that created harm for somebody, already we feel a little bit of agitation in our own hearts about this. And so that's a kind of an inner feedback of suffering in a way that helps us not want to hurt others. So this is a human response. We do put a lot of stuff on top of it, you know, at times. I know that there have been times, especially before I really started practicing, before I really met the practice, if I did something wrong or hurt somebody or found out that I hurt somebody, my mind would jump through hoops trying to figure out how I didn't have to blame myself for that person suffering. You know, it would try to figure out, well, they really, you know, they didn't understand, or, you know, I don't know. There's so many different hoops that my mind would jump through. Or really, it was okay. You know, sometimes my mind might just try to create the belief that it was okay what I did. So that feeling of offness, if we're not able to land with that and recognize, oh, you know, that's actually helping me to understand what is a good direction for the heart to go, and helping me to understand there's something to learn from that. If we're not defensive about it, then it will help to guide us in the direction of more happiness, of more ease and peace in our lives. There's a teaching that says that in one who behaves ethically, it's very natural for non-remorse to be there. So this is another gift of our ethical conduct. Not only do we give the freedom of fear to others, but we give ourselves what's called the bliss of blamelessness. And so very naturally, as we engage, you know, with this this ethical compass, you know, paying attention to this ethical compass, we find ourselves with less and less to regret, less remorse. And that lessening of remorse leads to delight, leads to joy, leads to happiness. There's a whole teaching that the whole of the path unfolds from this simple movement of checking into this moral compass. The Buddha had words for these, the quality this, that I was just talking to, this sense of, oh, that offness when I've done something that caused harm to somebody. The Pali is hiri, and a translation for that I like is conscience. That we have a conscience. You know, our human to human in relationship, we have a conscience when we've caused some harm. It tickles our conscience. It brushes up against that, and we feel it. And then there's another word of this describing this moral compass is otapa, which is, while the first one, conscience, is about noticing things that we've done in the past and how we recognize if we've caused harm, when we find out we've caused harm, how that lands. That's like recognizing from the past what we've done wrong. This other one, otapa, is about the future. Recognizing kind of almost our minds have this capacity to think forward into the future and feel what it would feel like to behave in a way that we know might cause harm. This Thanissaro Bhikkhu translates as concern. That we have concern for our fellow human beings. And so if we know that, if we are aware of our actions before we do them, we're conscious of them. You know, a simple example of this is if we can begin to be curious about our speech, you know, taking care with our speech, and maybe just be curious what, if you can catch the moment before you say something. You know what, if you can catch that moment, you might, in that moment, first of all, you know that you're going to say something, and probably because you know that you're going to say something, you probably will know what you're going to say. And in that moment of mindfulness, of knowing what's going to come out of your mouth, conscience and concern actually has a chance to operate. You know, we might recognize that what we're going to say has a little bit of a twist to it, or a little bit of a skew to it, or a little bit of an attitude to it. And with mindfulness, we might have the opportunity for that concern to inform us and to choose different language or silence, maybe, or to recognize actually what I am going to say is fine. It's not a problem. So this question of ethics here often is framed in the Buddhist teaching through the precepts, which are very like the Ten Commandments in a way. You know, they sound kind of similar. They're described as, you know, undertaking the precept to refrain from killing living beings, undertaking the precept to refrain from taking what is not given, undertaking the precept to refrain from creating harm through sexuality. And precept, actually, what the word there in Pali, a translation for the word sikapadang, is basically training rule. So undertaking the training to refrain from killing living beings, undertaking the training to refrain from taking what's not given, undertaking the training to refrain from causing harm through sexuality, undertaking the training to refraining from false speech, and undertaking the training to refraining from intoxicants, which tend to lead to heedlessness. So that tends to be the, you know, can be felt in a similar way to the Ten Commandments. But what the exploration here, I like to look at these as training rules, as guidelines for us to explore and to recognize that we may not be perfect, that if we break one of these precepts, I mean, partly, you know, around killing beings and taking what's not given, those are definitely creating harm in the world. You know, those are creating, you know, creating harm through sexuality, that sexual energy. This is putting our energy out there in the world in a way that is not safe. And so, you know, an exploration of kind of committing to these training rules is not saying I'm going to just blindly follow these rules. To me, this was a big difference. This was a big difference in understanding between what I learned as the commandments as a child and what I understand as these training rules. That the exploration is really about bringing mindfulness to our actions, and that in some ways, these actions, the Buddha points to, you know, if you engage in these actions, it will be creating harm. And so it's helpful to avoid them if you can avoid them. And in a way, they're kind of like wake-up bells for us. They're not just intended to be blindly followed, but rather we're asked to look what's happening in our hearts and minds if we're getting ready to break one of these precepts. So this takes mindfulness. It takes curiosity. It takes truthfulness to be able, and honesty, to be able to really see into our own hearts. You know, what is going on as we are perhaps engaged in picking up a shoe to swat at a spider on the wall? You know, what's going on there? Aversion, perhaps, to the spider. Fear, perhaps. These qualities of heart that create agitation for ourselves, create that heart of non-ease and result in harm to another being. So the exploration is about what's going on, not just to blindly follow these rules, but to look into our hearts. What is the motivation? What's underlying the movement to that breaking of that precept? You know, sometimes we, often in people, when people think about these kinds of things, like lying, for instance, you know, the fourth precept, refraining from false speech, And the question of, kind of the classic question of, you know, what happens if, you know, telling the truth would result in somebody else being harmed, like, you know, you're in Nazi Germany and the Nazi knocks on the door and says, "Are you hiding Jews?" And I say for myself, I hope I would have the courage to lie in that situation. I hope I would have the courage to not create further harm or more harm by both allowing the Nazi to take the person away and harm them, and to create the harm to the person by allowing them to be discovered. There is, though, something that I think we need to recognize here. It's not, and this is where I think the subtlety of the training, we begin to learn about our hearts with respect to looking at these precepts and looking at these training rules. You know, it's not that we can say the lying is without consequence. You know, the consequences of not lying, of not lying in that case, probably are far worse than the consequences of lying. And yet there is a ripple effect in the mind. There's something that happens in the mind when we lie. Maybe it's the fear of being discovered. What would they do to me if they found out I lied? You know, so that's real, that we also have the ripple effect from the lying itself. So it's not that we would say that, you know, the lying is not the lying has an impact on our hearts and minds. In this case, in my own heart, I will take the consequences of that impact of lying for the benefit of saving a human life. So this is kind of some of the subtlety of exploring these precepts. It's not like hard and fast. We have to really, you know, look at the intention and look at the consequences. Sometimes we have to make trade-offs of the consequences. In this case, the trade-off of the agitation in the mind around lying versus the saving of a life. These precepts are also, as trainings, the understanding is not just that we're refraining from something. We are refraining from an action here. That's the way the precepts are worded. We're refraining from some kind of an action, some kind of a physical action in the world. But the point isn't simply to refrain from that action. Part of the point is to begin to open the heart and mind to beautiful qualities that can begin to enter as we refrain from acting in ways that cause harm. And so there's one of the teachings around these precepts is that refraining from killing begins to open the door for the quality of compassion to start growing. Refraining from taking what's not given begins to open the door for the quality of contentment to start growing. Refraining from creating harm through sexuality, the classic here is refraining from committing adultery, and that is said to be, you know, creating the conditions for fidelity. But in our culture, I think it's really more kindness that is cultivated as we look at behaving in ways that don't where our sexual energy isn't kind of rippling out into the world in ways that are unhelpful. Refraining from false speech opens the heart to deeper ability to open to truthfulness. And refraining from intoxicants creates the conditions for more clarity of mind. In another exploration of ethics in the Buddhist teaching, this teaching I particularly like because it's not so much tied to the precepts, but it's really just tied to looking at how do we relate, how are we in relationship with our fellow human beings, and are we acting in a way that creates suffering, harm, affliction? This teaching, which is one the Buddha gave to his own son when he was 7 years old, it's kind of a classic teaching that, you know, a child can understand, but it is quite a profound teaching. The Buddha encouraged his son to use reflection before he acted, before he spoke, before he did something, even before he thought, although he's that one's really kind of challenging. So let's just stick with speech and action for now. You know, before you think, before you speak, before you act, reflect. Is this going to cause harm? Is this going to create affliction? And the question is it going to create affliction for another person, for yourself, or for both? And so really a full exploration of the relationship. Is this action going to create harm, affliction for self or other or both? If it is, the Buddha said, don't do it. This is pointing towards conscience, right? You know, concern. This is pointing towards that reflecting into the future. Our minds have this capacity to model what is going to happen. You know, we can think about our actions beforehand. We can play it out in our minds and recognize, oh, if I say that thing to that person, that might not land so well. So that's exploring that ethical compass of concern. So reflecting before we act, before we speak. Is this going to cause harm? And the Buddha says, if so, refrain from doing that. But he said, if you see that it is not going to cause harm, go ahead and do it. Then he says, while you are speaking, while you are acting, look at what's happening. Is it causing harm? This we can start to see. You know, we see, somebody's face as we say something. Or we see the consequences as we are doing something. This right here, whew, we get it in the moment. We feel it. Again, our ethical compass is saying, whoa, this is creating harm. If we are present, if we are mindful, if we are aware of what's happening in relationship, we will feel that. And again, not to the instructions to his son don't say, notice that you've caused harm and then beat yourself up about it. It says, notice if it's creating affliction and stop. Stop doing that. Stop taking that action. And then it goes further. After you have acted, check and see, did this action create harm? If it did, then undertake restraint in the future. To me, this points to if we've been following this all the way through, we've been looking at our hearts all the way through, we've been checking, is this going to cause harm? I don't see it's going to cause harm. Is it causing harm? I don't see it causing harm. Did it cause harm? Wow, it did cause harm. That was not my intention. It wasn't that I was setting out to harm somebody, but my actions, even with the intention and checking the intention, the impact was that harm was caused. This takes some degree of real, I think, integrity to acknowledge this. And again, it's not about beating ourselves up, but about the willingness to recognize, wow, this had an impact. My modeling of this, my thinking about this, my, you know, playing this forward, did not foresee this consequence. What did I not understand? That's how this ethical compass can serve us. What did I not understand? I had a recent situation where I took an action and thought it through. I thought fairly carefully. I checked with several other people and took the action. And then weeks later, I found out that that action had caused harm for somebody, had hurt somebody. And it took some time for me to understand. You know, it's like, at first my mind was going, but I checked. I did all the right things. You know, kind of like that defensiveness came up. I did all the right things. You know, I didn't do it wrong. It's like, well, I didn't understand something. Can I be curious about that? Can I look at that? And so I started just exploring in my heart, you know, over the course of a few days, after I found out what had happened, over the next 3 or 4 days, that scenario just kept coming back into my mind. I didn't, like, sit down and try to figure it out or think it through, but as it came into my mind, I felt in to my heart and felt that quivering of the heart that didn't want for there to have been harm caused, that felt that quivering, and just sat with that. And at some point in that, over those few days, the understanding arose of what I missed, of the piece that I did not take action on. I learned from that. So this is really helpful for us. And then this teaching with the Rahula Sutta, it's interesting to me that it doesn't explicitly ask us to make amends. You know, it doesn't ask us to go try to make amends. It says, you know, it says a couple things. It says, let somebody else know that you've made this mistake and undertake restraint in the future. I think that we can also add something about making amends here, looking at, you know, what's appropriate in terms of making amends. In this case, I apologized to the person and told them what I had learned. You know, told that person, this is what I learned here. That makes a big difference. You know, this willingness to acknowledge, yeah, I made this mistake, and this is what I've learned. That can be very healing for somebody who's been harmed by our actions. Sometimes we can't make amends. Sometimes I find it's not even necessarily, you know, there can be a way in which we're making amends for our own sake, not for the other person's sake. And that's something we need to be careful about, you know, that if bringing the situation up to somebody else who, you know, if bringing up that situation to somebody else would create more harm in their lives to have it brought up again. Maybe that's not, maybe that making amends is not what's called for. Maybe instead what's called for is the real deep inner work to explore what is it that led you to do that in the first place, and how can you refrain from doing that? But there are many times when it's helpful to apologize. Apologies are really powerful when they are heartfelt, when they are not just, oh yeah, I'm sorry, but you know, really deeply looked into, and what did I learn here? Asking for forgiveness sometimes can be a piece of that. That's an interesting exploration, I think. There have been times when I've apologized to somebody, and it's felt like, I don't know, there can be sometimes, I actually did some research on this. There was one situation where I felt inclined to both apologize and ask for forgiveness. And I looked at, because I wondered, I said, is asking for forgiveness somehow putting some kind of demand on the other person? You know, is that, you know, am I asking for absolution or something like that? And some of the things I read on read about, you know, forgiveness and apology, and this is where I felt into it for myself. It's like sometimes the forgiveness can be asking for absolution, and again, that's something to look at in yourself. Is that the reason why you're asking for forgiveness? Other times, the asking for forgiveness, in a way, it's like, it really acknowledges that the harm, that you understand how deep the harm was. You know, simply apologizing, there can be a way in which we simply apologize, but don't acknowledge in a way just how much pain was caused. And so in some ways, some of what I read was sometimes asking for forgiveness takes a deeper humility. And that's what I looked at in that particular case. It's like, okay, my inclination is to apologize and ask for forgiveness. Is it because I want absolution, or is it acknowledging my humility about what I did? And in that case, I decided to also ask for forgiveness. In that case, it wasn't like demanding for forgiveness. It's like, you know, and in fact, I was fine if the person decided to not forgive me. But it felt like it took a little bit of, it was an owning, it was really an owning of the mistake, in a way that sometimes an apology is not that kind of deep of an owning of the mistake. So forgiveness, asking for forgiveness, can be a piece of making amends. And then learning how to forgive ourselves is a big part of this, that we not hold on with shame and blame, but you know, forgive ourselves for the mistakes that we've made. The classic forgiveness practice, classic, the place I learned this is from Jack Kornfield. I haven't seen it anywhere else, so maybe it's classic Jack forgiveness practice. In any case, there's three ways in which Jack expresses the forgiveness practice. The first being to recall people whom you have harmed, and then asking for forgiveness. The second is recalling people who have harmed you and offering your forgiveness. And the third is recalling ways in which you have harmed yourself and offering yourself forgiveness. So this is a piece of our work with this discovering our ethical compass, because we will make mistakes. And we have to be able to forgive ourselves and move forward. Forgive ourselves, not brushing it under the rug or repressing it, but acknowledging, yes, I made this mistake. What can I learn from it? And for me, that piece of really acknowledging, what can I learn from this, that really helps with the forgiveness and moving forward. It is so much cleaner and so much more open-hearted to be able to acknowledge when we've made a mistake and move forward. This, I think, also takes the opening to these qualities of conscience and concern takes a real willingness to be honest and truthful with ourselves for how does it feel when I've done something that created harm? You know, this is how it feels. It hurts. It hurts to have caused this harm. Not to run from that or shirk from that or heap blame on ourselves for that, but to honestly acknowledge that. So to me, this question of these... I keep pointing here to my heart because that's where it feels. I feel this feeling of conscience and concern. This is where I feel it. And to me, it really points to... the way in this practice, the movement in our mindfulness practice is towards the open heart, towards the heart that is non-constricted. And this heart that quivers when it's caused harm is not a constricted heart. In fact, it's more like... Oh, it's like the heart is jelly, and it's like, yeah, that felt a little off, but it's not tight. The tightness is the resistance and the shame and the blame. So the movement, you know, when we feel the heart constricted, sometimes the practice can just be so simple. Does it feel like the heart is tight? Or is the heart relaxing? Head in the direction where the heart relaxes. And this inner ethical compass will very naturally help us move towards the heart that is non-constricted. So that's probably enough from me. Is there any thoughts or comments about what I've said or anything? Yeah, over here.
The other day, Gil opened things up to questions, and someone said that he was talking to a man who was 88 years old, who told him that he had no remorse for his life and for things he had done. And this man was incredulous, and he said, "How could that be? I have remorse for everything." And his question was, "How can I overcome that remorse?" And Gil said, "Forget your past and think about where you need to go now in forward." So in relation to what you've said, I have questions. Obviously, there are a lot of parameters, and it could be involve how much you've considered what you've done in the past and whether you've examined things. But I'm interested in what you have to say about remorse for things and dwelling on those.
Well, so again, it's not, when we look back at our lives, if we've caused harm in our lives, this ethical compass will be quivering. We might think of that sense of conscience as being a kind of remorse or regret, but it's not about shame and blame. So, you know, if thoughts of the past arise in which we remember some way in which we've caused harm, that sense of the quivering of that ethical compass will happen there. It doesn't have to pile on with, I'm such a bad person, I really, you know, etc. You know, it doesn't have to pile on with what maybe this person means by remorse, you know, regret. So in that way, you know, it's like the exploration might be, you know, if when the past comes up in our minds, which it does, memories arise in our mind, feeling into, you know, I don't think that we can just say forget the past, because it will come up, you know, it will arise. Now, the place maybe to explore is that moment when that the heart starts quivering, the piling on, I'm such a bad person, I did that bad thing, I did that bad thing, I did that bad thing, I did that, you know, so the piling on that happens, that is a good place to cut it. You know, to not continue that. But opening to, ooh, it hurt to hurt somebody. That's I think will ultimately need to be open to. Another place to explore is just, okay, you know, so those thoughts arise, you know, they are in the past. And so it's like not dwelling on that, right? So not replaying it. The thought arises, the response arises. That's enough. I think that may be what Gil meant by leaving that past behind. And in terms of in moving into the future, we have to be mindful. We have to be aware, because if we haven't learned from the past, we're just going to keep making the same mistakes. So, you know, in the moment, you know, when we are acting, this reflection, is this going to cause harm? Is this going to, you know, should I do this action? So it really does take some presence of mind and some honesty to look at that. I don't know if that's helpful in that direction, but yeah. So it's time to stop. Thank you all for your attention. And I'll be away next week, but the following week we'll continue with the paramis.